Morning. Well, here we are. Four of us firmly ensconced in ordinary time again, getting back to normal, working our way slowly through the scripture readings. We're back in the Gospel of Luke. Every gospel has its own flavor, its own structure, its own palette, depending on what analogy you want to use for it. And this morning's gospel is a good place to see how Luke's program differs somewhat from the program of Mark that we were reading this time last year. We want to do that this year, this week and next week, because that's the chance we get to get started on Luke again, and then we begin the summer series on the Psalms, which promises to be really fun in 2 weeks. But for 2 weeks, let's get a good look at where we are in Luke. You remember the corresponding passage from Mark that we read about this time last year? Starts off about the same. Who do people say that I am? John the Baptist, Elijah, one of the prophets. Who do you say that I am? And Peter is the spokesman. Now, in Mark, it's very carefully chosen words where Peter says, "You are the Messiah." Period. Because Mark is spending most of his architecture on that first verse, the beginning of the good news of Jesus, the Christ, the Son of God. And he wants you to hear Peter confess Jesus as Christ now, halfway through, but you won't hear Son of God until the very end, in the shadow of the cross. That's not where Luke is going. So he has no problem with Peter's words being the Messiah of God. But what didn't you hear? Sometimes what you didn't hear is just as important as what was added that you did hear. In Mark, immediately after that, Peter says, we skip the rebuke, which is here in Luke. And Jesus says, the Son of Man must suffer greatly, be rejected, be killed, and be raised on the third day. More or less the same as here. But then Peter says, no, nothing like that should ever happen to you. And Jesus goes off at him. I mean, he really goes off at him. He turns around, looks at him, and rebukes him. Get behind me, Satan. Calls him Satan. Fairly strong. Colorful language, shall we say. Because you're thinking the way people think, not the way God thinks. Luke erases all of that. Just doesn't report it. He's generally much gentler with the disciples. He eliminates stories that are to their detriment. He makes excuses for them as he goes along. He softens the criticism. And so he does here. He takes out that whole incident and moves the rebuke from after the prediction of the passion up to you are the Messiah of God. So it's gone from being chewed out by the drill sergeant to being shushed by the librarian. And who do you say that I am? The Messiah of God. Shh. It's a secret. Don't tell anybody. Fairly mild-mannered rebuke. So we know we're not going to be dealing with the marking structure here, right? Where the disciples really messing up after each prediction of the passion is very important. Between the two blind men, you've got that marking triptych, three blocks of three parts each. Jesus predicts the passion. The apostles mess up. Jesus explains it some more. But we've just taken out the middle brick of that first triptych. We don't hear Peter really messing up. But Luke does keep the teaching, the third brick. If you wish to come after me, you must deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. If you wish to save your life, you will lose it, but you lose your life, you will save it. All of that's taken more or less directly from Mark. But now notice what you did here. What does Luke add to that? Take up your cross daily and follow me. One word. In the English, one word in the Greek. But it makes a lot of difference. gives you a different program. You'll hear the same thing in the Our Father, where the daily bread part is a Lucan emphasis. Dailiness. It's going to be important for Luke. Makes a difference in the favor. Makes a difference in the challenge. When you hear, "You must deny yourself, take up your cross and follow me," immediately after, "I'm going up to Jerusalem and I'm going to be killed and raised on the third day," you tend to put those two together. The challenge of martyrdom is coming. Do you have guts enough to stand up to it? Well, that was an important question for the disciples in Galilee in the year 30. It was an important question for the Christians in the first couple of centuries when the Roman army, you know, thought that Christians constituted good entertainment in the circuses. Not really such a challenge today. At least not here. There are probably some parts of the world, well, even this year you can get killed for being a Christian. Nobody's going to kill you for being a Christian in Baltimore in 2007. If you're serious about it, they'll certainly look at you funny, because you live your life based on a whole different scale of values, a whole different way of approaching life. You'll look a little strange, and people will point that out to you with greater or lesser levels of approbation. But they won't put you to death for it. So, losing your life for my sake as a challenge to martyrdom may not really work for us very well. But Luke's challenge, take up your cross daily and follow me. It requires a little more thought. What does it mean? What will it mean for me if I do it? But it's certainly something more within the realm of my life. What would it mean to take up my cross daily and follow Jesus? What would it mean to lose my life in order to save it? In that context, daily life rather than challenge to martyrdom might mean something different. Might mean that if I go through life hanging on to me, making me the center of my world, trying to organize my life around my safety, my comfort, my profit, my concern, it ultimately won't work. First of all, as those of us who have tried it for any length of time can testify, you know, things never work out the way you plan them to, right? You don't get all the stuff you're planning to get by doing that. Secondly, even if you did, you're going to die. It's all going to go away ultimately anyway. What have you accomplished if you gain the whole world and lose or forfeit yourself? On the other hand, if you try to break out of yourself, give yourself away the way God gives God's self away in creation, the way Jesus gives himself away in the cross and resurrection, then you discover yourself and you find out who you are. And you become who you are. You find your life in losing it. Daily. Little by little. Day by day. Either centering in or decentering out. What does that mean? Day by day, month by month, year by year. Something different. Something continually different. Depending on where we are, where the next step needs to be. That's where a process of discernment is necessary. It's where some listening is necessary. What is God trying to tell me now? What's the next step I need to take to break out of myself and thereby save my life by losing it? How do we listen? Well, one possibility is get quiet enough. It takes quiet to listen. I just came back from a week down the monastery. Trappists have a place at Berryville, Virginia. Beautiful place. The old monk who was the guest master is a bit of a character. Brother Stephen puts on sort of a country bumpkin atmosphere. That's his public persona. But I've heard him drop one-liners that don't make sense unless you know Einstein's table conversation. Country bumpkin. At one point, now he's getting old. That's not a put on. And he does shuffle now a little more, and he has a hearing aid in each ear and all that trio. But one night during dinner, while he's supposed to be reading, he's, you know, I really can't even hear myself read. The refrigerator is just going on behind him. He took his hearing aid out, put it down, sat there for a minute. That's better. Now I can hear. Well, you know, maybe that was just a logistical thing. He really did need to get away from that. And then maybe he was trying to tell us something, too. Stephen does things like that. You got to get things quiet in order to hear anything, or the background noise will drown out whatever it was you needed to hear. It's like swimming in the Atlantic. Gone swimming in the Atlantic around here somewhere, Ocean City, somewhere up and down the bay. You get out to halfway to your knees, and you can't see your feet anymore for all the turbidity in the water. That's because you got all that surf churning up sand. Keeps the water full of sand. Ever been down the Caribbean? And you get to the point where you have to tread water because you can't touch bottom, and you can still see your little toe wiggle. Of course, there's a reef out there that's picking up the surf. You don't have anything stirring up the sand in here. When the sand settles, you can see further. It's one of the ways to figure out what does it mean to take up the cross daily. Get quiet enough to let the sand settle. See what you can see. Take out the hearing aid that's amplifying the refrigerator. See what you can hear. Get quiet for a couple days. You can actually hear things. I started hearing birds again. And cows. The cows you hear from the first day, they're pretty obvious. What else did I hear? I think I may have heard the voice of God. What was God saying? Lighten up. I take that to mean four things. One, lose some weight. God seems to be on my doctor's side. Two, enjoy life more. Three, criticize less. Four, complain less. Lighten up. Is that exactly where I need to go or what I need to do? I don't know. Give it a try and see. And if it is, it won't last for long. You know, you try that for a while, and even if it works, what it does is get you into position to take the next step, which may need to be in a little bit of a different direction. It's not a one fell swoop thing of martyrdom, where you give your life away for Christ and that's that. It's a step-by-step thing. Listen a little, take a step, listen a little, take a step. It's like blind men playing golf at night. You know that story? Two religious went out to play golf, a Franciscan and a Jesuit. Now you know the Franciscans and you know the Jesuits, right? The party in front of them was very, 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 very slow. I mean, it just seemed like it took them forever to do anything. And finally they realized that the guys in front of them were all blind. And the Franciscan said, "Oh my Lord, this is terrible. Guy could swing his club and not know there was a bird there and decapitate the poor little bird. Hit a drive down the fairway and kill a rabbit because he didn't know the rabbit was there. This is awful." The Jesuit said, "Why don't they make them play at night?" And life is like that, you know. You sort of fumble your way down the course from one shot to the next. Whether it is night or not, you're not really sure. But you keep trying. And I think that's a part of what Luke is telling us here, just by that one little addition. He's not interested in demonstrating the failure of the disciples in the great Mark and structure. He turns their royal cussing out down to a librarian shush. But he does want us to try to take up our cross daily and follow. Listen, figure out the next best direction, take another step or two or three, stop and listen some more, take a few more steps. Ultimately, your game is to lose your life for Christ's sake in order to save it. And you do that on a daily basis, a step or two at a time. I think that's Luke's program for the gospel and for the summer. We'll hear next week. Read ahead, you'll find it. The journey to Jerusalem. So that one step at a time motif may be one of Luke's ideas, organizing principles. Think about it. Might work for you. Sisters and brothers, let us pray.